I am here to talk about a new training program called Reach the Decision Makers. This is a project of the Program on Reproductive Health and the Environment, or PRE as we call it, out of the University of California, San Francisco. The REACH program was created to address a continuing challenge with developing effective policies at the national level to reduce the impacts of environmental contaminants on reproductive health. This is in part due to the fact that important scientific findings and their implications do not always reach key government decision makers. I have nothing to disclose. The REACH team includes Tracy Woodruff, who's director of PRE and an associate professor in the Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences and Pediatrics. She has done extensive research and policy development on environmental health issues. She was also a senior scientist and policy advisor at the EPA. Patrice Sutton and Jessica Trowbridge provide scientific support to the participants in the program. Jason Harless is our administrative coordinator, and I manage and oversee the program. The Program on Reproductive Health and the Environment's mission is to create a healthier environment for reproductive, human reproduction, and child development through advancing scientific inquiry, clinical care, and health policies that prevent exposures to harmful chemicals in our environment. PRE works at the intersection of science, medicine, policy, and community. Scientific indicators of declining reproductive function, such as difficulty in conceiving and maintaining pregnancy and sperm counts, and increasing rates of reproductive illnesses, such as testicular cancer, since the mid-20th century, suggest our reproductive health and ultimately our reproductive capacity are under tremendous strain. One estimate is that 7.3 million American women aged 15 to 44 will have difficulty conceiving or bringing a pregnancy to term during her lifetime, and 2 million couples in the U.S. are infertile. This and other evidence is mirrored in the wildlife population as well. So what's the problem if we know all of this science? Federal government decision makers, such as those at the EPA, often lack both the time and resources to keep up with the latest science. As a result, they utilize the information provided by interest groups, often those with financial interest. In contrast, many scientists, providers, and communities concerned about the impacts of the environmental toxics on reproductive health lack the resources and experience to have a consistent presence at the federal level. A growing body of evidence linking environmental contaminants to reproductive harm illustrate the need for greater participation by scientists, health-affected groups, providers, and community organizations. EPA has a large and important influence over the health of the public, as it has authority to develop and enforce regulations in a myriad of ways, including setting of national standards to limit pollutant levels, setting monitoring requirements for environmental pollution, toxicity testing, and training requirements. Passing legislation is only the first step in effective policies to protect reproductive health. Interpretation of laws and implementation of policies throughout the regulatory system, such as by the EPA, are a critical second step in developing and ensuring the public's health. Reach the Decision Makers is based on the successful Women's Policy Institute of the Women's Foundation of California, which I helped create and have directed for the past 9 years, and is funded by the Kresge Foundation and gifts from individuals. We aim to connect the scientific, public health, clinical, and advocacy voices to the U.S. EPA. The first year of the program was based in California, but then we went national in year two and will recruit a national fellowship in year three as well. Not everyone fits the program model. REACH is based on experiential learning and a collaborative teamwork model, so ensuring the applicants fit the program model is very important. Also important is that fellows have experience in either environmental or reproductive health and have organizational support to join the program. The training program includes 9 webinars, 1 2-day session for the entire class in Washington, D.C., funds for each team to go to Washington, D.C. on their own, a mentor for each team, support and mentorship from PRE, and each participant receives a $500 honorarium at the end of the program for their participation. Training topics include scientific, policy, and advocacy sessions. Some of the national experts in environmental health, public policy, and EPA are brought in as trainers and speakers. And key to the REACH program is the use of a team policy project, which is chosen by the team and gives the trainees a real issue to work on, to practice finding scientific evidence, to consider policy options, to identify US EPA staff and offices who should be engaged with, and to create succinct policy materials and meeting agendas. Policy projects can be anything worked on by the EPA, including regulatory activities such as expanding chemicals considered for testing under the endocrine disruptor screening program, to new areas of research, such as including reproductive health and technical guidance that addresses environmental justice, improving data collection methods, and also producing reports and asking for increases in funding for specific science. Our first class, the 2011 REACH cohort, which again was from California, is very diverse in their area of expertise, and we also select participants so that we try to balance the various areas that they come from so that each team can actually be made up of a community-based leader, a research scientist, a healthcare provider, a public health expert, and other types of backgrounds. The 2010 REACH cohort is, as you can see from the map, we were able to bring in people from as far north as Sacramento to San Diego and some from inland in California. Our current cohort, the 2011 group, is from throughout the United States, including, as you can see up in the corner, Alaska, and we've tried to have diversity from all sectors of the United States. So, our evaluation team, we have tons of evaluation data. I'll be focusing on the evaluation results from the first year. Our independent evaluators are Claire Brindis, who's a professor in the Department of Pediatrics Division of Adolescent Medicine and in the Department of OB-GYN and Reproductive Sciences, and Anne-Marie Charlesworth, who's a program evaluator and research specialist also at UCSF. And again, these are all from the first year, the first cohort of the REACH program. So as you can see, a majority of fellows indicated that they were successful to very successful in reaching their initial goals for participating in the fellowship. So there's a high degree of satisfaction with the program overall. We queried about their level of knowledge and skills, their confidence in their level of knowledge and skills when they started the program, and then asked them whether their level of confidence in their knowledge and skills had increased because of the program. And so as you can see, fellows indicated moderate to significant growth in key program areas where they previously had less experience or training, especially in the areas of environmental health, which 85% of the fellows indicated moderate to significant growth in understanding environmental health as a result of the program, 70% moderate to significant growth on reproductive environmental health, and 85% moderate to significant growth in understanding public policy. The largest change was 45% of first-year participants who said their level of confidence in their knowledge and skills had significant growth in the area of public policy. So a lot of the things that we had intended to do, we feel pretty confident that we were successful in being able to do. We also asked about other issues specific to the US EPA. Fellows reported moderate to significant growth, again, in their understanding of what the US EPA does, their confidence in working effectively with the US EPA, and their confidence in establishing relationships and partnerships with EPA staff. So as the last chart showed, the dark color on the far right is what the fellows indicated as significant growth. The purple is what they indicated as moderate growth, the red as minimal growth, and the yellow as no growth. The science literacy had the largest group of fellows, 24%, who said that they had no growth in science literacy, and that's an area that we're focusing on as we develop the program, how to create better change in that area. We have, again, it's a very mixed fellowship, so there's scientists, public health providers, medical providers, and community members. And one of the things we're having a difficulty in, why we like the idea of different voices being parts of a project, having difficulty trying to train people who have different level of expertise in things like science literacy. So the scientists are bored by the trainings on science literacy, and the community people are feeling like, hold on a second, you move too fast. So we're really trying to figure out a way to balance that part of the training. The greatest benefits of participating in the program from the fellows include increasing team building and leadership skills for working in teams, increasing knowledge about the environmental impacts on reproductive health, increased confidence in being able to discuss science with policymakers and the public. This, in fact, is a photo of one of our fellows talking with U.S. Representative Jackie Speier. We had a celebration at the end of the first year, and Representative Jackie Speier came, and was it was amazing how all of the fellows just dove for her. They were ready to talk to her and ready to engage with her, and that was very sweet to see their confidence in that. And also said that another benefit was their increased understanding of how the US EPA works. These are some quotes from the fellows about how their understanding of what US EPA does, how it increased, including how their comfort level rose by the simple, quote-unquote, experience of just meeting with US EPA staff, and how the trainings themselves helped to increase this understanding. The first quote, speaking face-to-face with them, the US EPA staff, helped me get over reservations that I would have anything of value for them to learn. And then the last quote, both webinar lectures and our direct work with the US EPA on our policy project helped me understand what it takes to work with this agency. Fellows also noted impact on those around them in that the fellowship gave credibility and increased skill to the fellows' voice in their community to talk about environmental impacts in the community. This fellow said, our community members, agency staff, and elected officials have a higher respect for the work that we do due to this fellowship. The fellowship has served as a tool to educate the community on the larger diesel problem, and that there is a viable solution that they can advocate for. Fellows also learned that working with federal agencies, once they get past their initial discomfort, is about long-term relationships and focused efforts. One fellow said, I confirmed the importance of doggedness. I learned about advocating as a unified voice when possible. For some, simply knowing that they already know what they need to know was a big outcome of the program. Increasing people's confidence is a key element. This fellow said, a lot can be accomplished with the knowledge we already have. My experience is valuable to decision makers, and now I can approach them with confidence. From the evaluation, some of our lessons learned. The first year of the program, we had 3-hour webinars, and I guess I have a stronger bladder than most because the fellows had to say to me during the webinar, we need a break to go to the bathroom. So we realized that it was actually 3 hours is way too long on the webinar to be able to retain anything from the last hour. So the second year, we changed to 2-hour webinars, and that seems to be going better. Team-based learning is an important component of this, and learning how to work with each other, especially around policy, that we need to have multiple voices in order to have the most impact. The team-based element of the program, it was good, except in the first year we did not allow enough time for the individuals who had not known each other before the program to bond and build relationships, so we switched the curriculum around in the second year to give them more time for that, and also that there needed to be more of a commonality of interest. In the Women's Policy Institute, we kind of put people together loosely based around an area like economic justice or environmental justice, and even though one person may work on water and one person on air, they work it out because they have more face time to do that. But in a program where we don't have a lot of face time, we really need to put people together based more on their interest. So we changed that around in year two. The team policy projects also must have be more maintainable by the entire team. In year one, not all of the teams had members who would take the project beyond the first year. And in year two, where we put people together more based on their common interests, each team has a couple of people who will take the project on beyond the project year, but administrative policy really does take a longer time than, say, a legislative process, especially in the state legislature. And so we're going to try a new way in year three, where we're actually going to be recruiting for coalitions or folks who would like to develop a coalition around a specific issue. So a coalition from a specific community working on a specific issue that includes a researcher, a health provider, a community person, we would take that coalition and have that coalition go through the training program, receive all of the support and mentorship from the training program. And then at the end of the year, the hope would be that coalition would continue working on that project. So that's the end of the presentation. As I said, we're making changes on the program based on the evaluation that we hope to be able to make in our third year. We will be recruiting our third year starting in January. I believe applications will be due in February. Again, we're really going to be implementing a new way of doing this and recruiting teams already formed of folks who have either worked together or would like to work together on an environmental reproductive health issue. So thank you for your attention. Appreciate it. Yes.
I think this is great, and one of the biggest challenges in environmental health is having scientists communicate with policymakers. So I'm wondering if there's been any interest in this, or if there are plans to disseminate this model in the area of pediatric environmental health or healthy aging and vulnerable communities, and how can we make this model go farther?
Yeah, we our hope is that through the 3 years of funding that we have from the Kresge Foundation, that we're really gathering the data that we need to be able to show how we can really educate people and get them in movement, get them in action on these issues as quickly as possible. And I think PRE, which does a tremendous amount of environmental health, including children's health and other issues, is very interested themselves in trying to replicate this and trying to create more learning opportunities and training programs. Our hope by being able to come to places like APHA and publishing will be, we're open source, so all of the curriculum materials will be available to anybody who wants them. Our evaluation data, what they like, what they don't like, what worked and didn't work will be available. We like to see replication and people to steal our stuff. So that's our hope at this point.
Thank you, that is fascinating presentation. I wanted to say that you said that you, one of your points was that you were able to increase the confidence of translating the science among your fellows participating. So I was wondering about kind of the flip side of it. Are they learning, so they're getting more comfortable. Do you have training that includes like talking around the jargon of the science that they're comfortable in so that the people of EPA or whoever you're reaching out to are also able to assimilate, absorb whatever the information?
So whether it goes both ways or, I mean...
Well, I think it goes both ways, but in the fact that not only are your fellows more comfortable, but
yes,
the people that they're working with are now more comfortable in talking about the science and the intricacies of the science, the message.
Yes.
The message go over.
Does the message? Yeah. I mean, I think that we are going to actually add to the evaluation component interviewing EPA folks who have been met with by the teams to try to get a better sense of what is their openness or resistance, what are they learning in this process as well. So we'll have that to add to our evaluation reports in the future. An interesting sub-piece of this is the interpretation of data, and having such mixed groups is really wonderfully challenging that. And we're still looking at how to introduce that into as more of a training component into the program. Right now we're just talking about it, but on each team where the scientist feels a little like, oh, hold on a second, I'm not exactly comfortable with the way that science just got framed, or the community member or the public health person is saying, no, but this is the way we have to talk about this because this is what the science means. And so we're still working that element out right now. It's mostly just being worked out on the team level, but I think there's something to learn about how to do that in a larger training piece. Because I do think that that is one of our, as a community, one of our largest problems is, you know, that there is a kind of a degree maybe of where we feel comfortable about talking about the science. And scientists tend to be at a further degree of, you know, you can't say that and you can't say that. And we understand that. And then there's also another part of that, though, which is we have to be able to interpret the science. And unfortunately, our side, I think, worries too much about overstating the science than the other side. But, you know, I think we'll find a happy medium. And maybe through this project, we'll be able to do that. So, great. Thank you all very much.